This week on the show, we talk Patriots-Jaguars with CBS Boston's Michael Hurley. Was the miracle in Minnesota the greatest football ending of all time? And we have some fun with the lineup for Boston Calling. All that and more coming up. Calling It starts right now. Let me just say, F the snow. It's been 3 weeks we were in studio. We finally have Alex Lebowitz back, flat tires and all.
Yep.
We needed to do a real show this week. Welcome to the Calling It podcast, powered by CLNS. I am Alex Barth. He is Alex Lebowitz. And we are on to the AFC Championship game. Boy, feels good. Another victory Monday.
It really does. More football in store.
Joining us now on the phone, you've read his work and heard him at 98.5 The Sports Hub and 98.5thesportshub.com, is Michael Hurley, noted Jags enthusiast. How's it going, Mike?
It's going great. It's a Jags week, so you know nothing's wrong this week.
Second Jags week of the year. One preseason, one postseason. I think this one's a little more exciting. But before we get to that, real quick, just to look back at the Patriots Titans win and. There's a lot of similarities. They play in the same division between the Titans and the Jaguars, but looking at how the Patriots contained Derrick Henry, how much of that game plan do you see recyclable against Leonard Fournette?
Yeah, I'm a big Fournette fan. I think he's been awesome, not all year, but for a large chunk of the year, and I think what he did in Pittsburgh Sunday was pretty impressive, especially considering he busted his ankle in the second quarter, worked through it, still had a 3-touchdown game, 120 yards, so he's definitely a formidable opponent, but at the same time, you look at the Patriots, you look at how their defensive line is responsible, how they control the gaps, how they are just always so well coached and so just large and smart and strong that I don't actually think Fournette is going to come in and have a huge day, just because I've watched the way Belichick has his defensive line play and the way the linebackers fill in. It's just it's not as big of a threat, I think, as it would be against another team like Pittsburgh. And on top of that, you talk about the Titans having a similar game plan. I think Mariota is a much better quarterback than Blake Bortles, and obviously he didn't exactly have a banner night. So I think there's a lot of reason to feel good about the Patriots' defense against the Jaguars' offense.
And another player who went off this past week, Tom Brady. It seems like it was his best game the past couple months. Do you think that was him kind of just taking advantage of a mediocre opponent, or do you expect him to kind of carry that over? Is he back on track, in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, he kind of looked like a man possessed. And I don't want to, you know, dive too deep into his mind, but that late season slide seemed a little bit health-related, seemed a little bit, personnel-related with some of the injuries on the offense, but I don't know, maybe he just wasn't as, you know, crazy into it, because he was great in Pittsburgh, which was basically a playoff game, and, you know, the Jets, the Bills, the Dolphins, games like that, he wasn't really on. So I think once the playoffs kicked back on, we got to see Brady look like Brady again, and I don't know exactly what to expect against the Jaguars, because it is a much better defense. They can man up with Boye and with Ramsey, with, say, Cooks and Hogan. And then, you know, that's an advantage right there. You still have a lot of work to do on defense when you consider Rob Gronkowski, Danny Amendola, Deion Lewis, James White, Rex Burkhead. There's a lot of bodies to cover, but I do think the Jaguars have a much better defense. It's going to be harder, but at the same time, Gronkowski just went up basically in man coverage against the first-team All-Pro safety in Kevin Byard and just took his lunch money all night long. So no matter who you have to go up against him, he's probably going to get him if you don't double him, and then that – it's a whole series of problems where Amendola is probably wide open. So I have a great respect for the Jags' passing defense, but I look at the Patriots, and every time I try to, you know, give the edge to the defense, there's just too many dangerous receivers. And it's just crazy, really, to think about it, that without Edelman, they still have so many pieces that can just kill you.
But you do mention how good the Jaguars' defense is. And after the Jags won yesterday, the Dan Shaughnessys of the world, even your co-worker Adam Jones, declaring it another tomato can game and that kind of talk. Do you think people are underestimating the Jaguars simply because of the name and because they've been that perennial punchline?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at the two-toned helmets, you look at Doug Marrone on the sidelines, you look at Blake Bortles flailing duck deep balls, and you're like, this team is terrible. But no, the defense is legit. I mean, Calais Campbell's at 14.5 sack. sacks. You know, you go down they were second in the league in sacks. They were second in the league in interceptions. They were first in passing yards allowed. They were first in opponent's passer rating. They were second in yards allowed. You know, they are a legitimate defense. And you look at what they did in Pittsburgh twice. You know, the Patriots went to Pittsburgh and won by 3 points on a Jesse James bobble in the end zone and then a Ben Roethlisberger meltdown. The Jaguars went in there and won 30-9 and then 45-42 in a game that wasn't as close as the 3 points would indicate. So, you know, the team can win with that defense. You know, Miles Jack had the interception yesterday in Pittsburgh, and then they get the strip sack in Ngakoue. I don't correct my pronunciation if that's wrong.
I think you
and
got
then,
it.
You know, yeah, I've been practicing all day long. The strips, I mean, those are the types of things where, yeah, the Patriots are better, and if the Patriots play their best, they'll beat the Jaguars. But those plays change games. I mean, Blake Bortles wasn't great, and they still scored 45 points. So that's indicative, and I think that's what people have to be aware of, is the Patriots, you know, all things being equal, should win. But a couple things don't go their way. You know, they punt a couple more times than they expect. All of a sudden, it could be, you know, 13-10 in the fourth quarter, and anything can happen then. So that's what I think you got to be aware of going into the AFC title game.
And we're talking to Michael Hurley of 98.5 The Sports Hub. Michael, it seems like in games like this, conference championship games, the Pats always seem to pull tricks out of their sleeves. There's one player who we don't really hear from or see a lot of during the regular season that kind of goes off. Is there someone that you're looking at that might make an impact for the Patriots that we wouldn't really expect?
Well, I'll tell you what. As much as I respect the Jaguars and I think their defense is legitimate, I think, you know, you're going to see an interception from Devin McCourty or Daron Harmon if Bortles decides to launch that ugly deep ball again. So that's not to say that McCourty and Harmon are unheralded or anything like that, but I think that's the type of game-changing play that the Patriots can answer, whereas the Steelers didn't intercept any of Bortles' three deep balls, and one of them actually got completed down to the goal line. I think it was Jacksonville's last touchdown drive, so, or maybe the field goal drive, whatever it was, but that's something that I would expect. Offensively, it's hard to pinpoint someone that maybe hasn't shown. I mean, the only guy who hasn't really exploded has been Dwayne Allen, and I wouldn't. I'm not going to go and say it's a Dwayne Allen week coming up. So, I think it wouldn't be surprising to see Cooks almost shut down because, you know, Ramsey and Boye, whoever gets them, they're so good, they're so physical, and Cooks isn't really a big body, physical type receiver. Maybe we'll get to see Kenny Britt. You know, he is big, he is strong, he is fast. Maybe he matches up well against whether it be their third corner or whoever it might be. Maybe he comes through, he's not going to go off, but maybe he'll have three catches for 40 yards or something and, you know, keep some drives moving.
So going back, obviously, it's been told to death. If you haven't heard yet and you're listening, this is the seventh straight appearance in the AFC Championship game for the New England Patriots. And going back chronologically here, from the start to now, their opponents have been the Ravens twice, the Broncos, the Colts, the Broncos, the Steelers, and now the Jaguars. Is this the most unique team they have faced in the AFC Championship game in that stretch?
Maybe. I mean, that Colts team in 2014 was pretty bad. They had probably the worst run defense in the history of sports. So,
Jonas Gray, thanks.
Yeah, exactly. Jonas Gray, you know, his one shining night in whatever, November of that year, and never heard from again. That's how bad they were. And, you know, but it does speak to how the Patriots craft and mold their game plans. It's opponent specific, and that's something that the Steelers didn't do, and that's why their, you know, their season's over. But when the Patriots faced the 14 Colts in that AFC title game, they went with the sixth lineman, Cam Fleming would come in and they would just roll people over. I mean, it was just tough to watch. It was like a bully beating up a 30-pound kid in the schoolyard, and then, you know, they throw the touchdown to Nate Solder for good measure. But that was, you know, that was an indication of what the Patriots do and what McDaniels does and what Brady does to alter their game plan as needed. So a lot of people are expecting maybe a repeat of what Brady and the offense did last week when they come out against the Jaguars. But I wouldn't be surprised to see them look like a completely different offense just because they are talented and smart enough to, you know, change things on the fly. But definitely unique in that probably their worst quarterback faced. Not a lot of, you know, receiving talent. It's just really defense and Fournette are the things you got to worry about. So I guess they'd be unique. I mean, maybe some of those Ravens teams where, you know, Flacco wasn't exactly flying, but Flacco was better than Bortles. So I'll say, yeah, it was pretty unique.
How much do you make of the Tom Coughlin factor in this matchup?
I think it could be big if, you know, he can just convince Doug Marrone not to panic, to convince Doug Marrone, listen, you may be down by 7, you may be down by 10, but you got to stick to your game plan. You can't get overwhelmed. You can't start, you know, making desperate decisions. And it's an absolutely huge factor. I mean, it's not necessarily going to, you know, if the Patriots are destined to win by 20 points, then they're going to win by 20 points. But, you know, if it's a close game, Doug Marrone might be, you know, better than Doug Marrone would normally be if not for Tom Coughlin's guidance and tutelage. Because, I mean, you go through it, outside of Mike Shanahan, no one else had Belichick's number quite like Tom Coughlin. So you got to factor it in at some point. But fortunately, Tom Coughlin will be up in the press box or in the booth, so we won't have to see his face just dripping off just as he slowly dies on live TV, because that was something we'll never forget 10 years ago.
I feel like it's got to take every ounce of strength Coughlin has not to tell Marrone, you know what, stay home this week. I got it.
Absolutely. There should be no debate, really. The Jaguars as an organization just be like, you know what, Doug, we'll give you the Super Bowl if we get there, but this is Tom's weekend.
So I know this is kind of looking into the future a bit, but say the Pats win this week, who is the more ideal opponent for them, the Vikings or the Eagles?
That's a great question, because those defenses are the real deal. I think Minnesota's defense is a little bit better, and you have the home field factor, which I don't know. I mean, it helps. It's probably not a deciding factor, but I think, you know, if given the choice of playing a team that has to travel like you, or a team that, you know, they can all live in their homes and their life is normal and be completely routine for another week, I think you take the Eagles. So I think they'd probably rather the Eagles. I think Foles is a worse quarterback. I think they know LeGarrette Blount pretty well. They know Jay Ajayi pretty well. I think you'd probably rather take the Eagles on. I don't think their defense is quite on Minnesota's level. But then again, I mean, I say that now, and then if the Eagles, you know, march all over the Vikings next weekend, I'm going to look like an idiot. So I don't know that. I think a lot is being made about the bad quarterbacks that are left in Bortles, Keenum, and Foles, but, you know, they're good teams, and that's why they're there, and I don't think, you know, anyone is a particular cakewalk, and, you know, I thought the Falcons would be a pretty easy opponent for the Patriots in the Super Bowl last year, and, I mean, I guess if you look at the last, like, 15 minutes of the game, I was right, but for the most part, I was pretty wrong, so it's always hard to tell.
And just before we let you go, earlier this morning, reports coming out that Patricia will be going to the Lions to be their new head coach. First of all, what are your initial reactions to that news? And do you think Josh McDaniels will be out the door as well?
I think Patricia, that's good for him. It's sort of the natural progression of things. And I think he's important to the defense, obviously. But, you know, the way they build the staff and the way Belichick, you know, hires these guys that work, you know, 90-hour weeks for $5 a week. I think they have they're able to withstand that.
He is Michael Hurley. You can read his work at CBS Boston, and you can follow him on Twitter at Michael F. Hurley. Mike, thanks for taking the time and joining us on yet another Jags Week.
Thank you so much. I can't wait for the next year. By the way, they're going down to Jacksonville.
Can't wait.
Not in London. We dodged a bullet. Thank you.
Yeah.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Thanks to Mike for coming on and joining us on the Calling It podcast, powered by CLNS. In addition to that Patriots-Titans game, we had three other games over the weekend. A really, really, really strong weekend of football.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to watch. Every game, really except for the Pats game, was very entertaining.
And we'll start in the AFC, how the Patriots got the Jaguars. They defeated the Pittsburgh Steelers, which I called, for the record. And, I mean, there's a million places we could start with this. We had a poll up on Twitter yesterday, so we'll begin there. Did the Jaguars win this game, or did the Steelers lose it?
I think the Steelers lost it. You have home field advantage. Two of those turnovers that they had led to scores, which ended up being the difference. Countless coaching errors and game management mistakes. So, yeah, I think the Steelers, a team that has always had flaws with their coaching game plan, it came back to bite them yesterday.
So I'm not sure that I'm going to say this. I don't 100% mean it, and I don't mean to sound wishy-washy. I just mean this is an extreme example. But watching at least the first half yesterday before the Steelers made their adjustments, and they did in the second half, and they almost came back, watching the game plan the Steelers came out with, it seemed to me like they were trying to attack a defense that didn't have a lot of speed. And defensively, they were worried. They seemed worried about a team that was going to throw the ball.
Yeah.
Now, that's not the Jacksonville Jaguars at all. Their defense is very quick, and they barely throw the ball. You know who that is? It's the New England Patriots. I legitimately wonder, and I think you see where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
Did the Steelers sleep on the Jaguars so bad that they said, all right, we'll come up with the Patriots game plan, and we'll have a week to fine-tune it against Jacksonville? I really wonder if they had a unique Jaguars game plan. I don't think they did. I think that was their Patriots game plan.
I wouldn't go that far. I think they had a game plan. But you're on point in the sense that they were looking past this week. They don't go day by day, week by week like, you know, the Patriots do. They're looking at the Patriots as the enemy. And, yeah, we have this bump in the road right here. But once we get past that, we get the Pats, and we will beat them. And that's the whole thing. They were getting ahead of themselves, and it bit them in the ass.
How many times does this team have to be embarrassed before they learn their lesson? Look, the Steelers have had, what is it, three coaches since 1960.
Mm-hmm.
The previous two they had left on their own accord for retirement. If there was ever a time, and it's not going to happen, but if there was ever a time for the Pittsburgh Steelers to fire their first coach, it's today. It's January 15th, 2018, because Todd Haley should be gone, and I think he will be.
Mm.
But the job Mike Tomlin did getting Todd Haley ready and getting the rest of his team ready was atrocious. Absolutely atrocious. The guy's been skating on his Super Bowl win for too long. And the fact of the matter is, take Antonio Brown off that team, they're 8-8. That's an 8-8 football team. That is not that good of a football team. They have an aging, barely mobile quarterback. They have a shoddy defense with no secondary. They have a running back whose head clearly is not primarily on football. The rest of their wide receivers, sure, they're good. But you take Antonio Brown off that team, they lose to teams like the Packers without Aaron Rodgers. They lose to the Bengals. That is an 8-8 football team, and a lot of it has to do with poor decision-making. That coach should absolutely be gone. I know that's not what the Steelers do, but if I'm in Pittsburgh today, I'm calling for Tomlin's head. You go back and you watch the clip of him before the Sunday night game where they ask him, how do you not look ahead to the Patriots? And he says, well, I'm not just looking ahead to the first Patriots game, I'm looking ahead to the second. I don't know how you can wake up this morning, see that clip as a Steelers fan, and not vomit. I don't know how you see them score at the end of that game, that final second play in the end zone, and not ask yourself, where was that play against New England? Because the Steelers could have been playing the Titans yesterday, but they completely collapsed at the end of the game against New England, and that, like we talked about at the time, was on the coaching staff. Mike Tomlin has a lot to answer for, and frankly, he shouldn't get a chance to answer for it.
Yeah, it's going to start heading into Marvin Lewis territory, where this guy hangs around and hangs around.
That's a great analogy. I just want to let you know, that's a great analogy.
Yeah, well, it's true. Because, yes, the Steelers have always been a top three team in the AFC. They're usually one of the top teams in the AFC. But they've always had a stacked roster. They've always had one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. They've always had a good run game and a very good wide receiver on top of it. And, you know, prior to 2010, they had an elite defense, like an unbelievable defense that I remember watching with Troy Polamalu and when James Harrison was actually really good. Now they've lost that. Now it seems like this loss is so much bigger than just this season and Mike Tomlin needs to be fired and all that. Le'Veon Bell might retire. He's going to hold out.
He's going to, for sure, and he should.
Ben Roethlisberger is on the decline. And, I mean, those two alone, that's enough to really start questioning where things are going with this team. And, you know, you look at how Mike Tomlin handles this roster, how he handles himself with the media in general. There's no wonder why there's so many, you know, problems with the personalities on that team. Whether it's Antonio Brown freaking out in the sidelines, Le'Veon Bell wanting to hold out, Ben Roethlisberger just being
Mike Mitchell,
just being a dick all the time. Mike Mitchell, yeah, Mike Mitchell looking ahead to the Patriots as well. It's a systematic problem.
We can play him
problem.
In hell. We can play him in Haiti. Well, you're not going to play him at all.
You're not playing him anywhere in your dreams. That's it. So you look at all this stuff coming together. It's bad. It's bad. The team seems to be on a spiral down, and it's not the type of team that you look at and you're like, that's a Super Bowl contender right there. No, that's a team with a lot of problems, and it starts with Mike Tomlin.
That's a sinking ship right there. The theme of the weekend was bad coaching. Let's go to the job done by Dan Quinn, another coach I think should lose his job. I thought they were going to miss the playoffs. He's going to get fired. And Steve Sarkisian, I don't know why people keep hiring that guy. An interesting game between the Falcons and the Eagles. We could kind of get into the gut of it, but I mean, all anybody's talking about is the final four plays for the Falcons and the shuffle pass on second down that didn't really work. You had the Jags run that play yesterday by accident, and it was their worst play of the game, and it was early, and they were very disappointed. The Falcons ran it on purpose in crunch time, and then to roll out on that fourth down play, when you roll out of the pocket, right, you take away half the field. They lined a fullback up out wide to the left, which only magnifies that. He ended up getting open one-on-one with a corner, which is outstanding, but that side of the field's gone. Matt Ryan's not looking there. He completely telegraphed Julio Jones. If that's the play you're going to let your season ride on, I'd hate to see the play that was second to that. That was just poor play calling.
Yeah, and you see that a lot. Just teams, when they need to make a play, you should have a play that you know is going to work 95% of the time. They clearly didn't.
Right, if that's the 95% play, what's the 91% play?
Yeah, honestly. But you do have to give the Eagles credit. That defense played phenomenal. And obviously the Falcons do a good job of shooting themselves in the foot, but the Eagles are legit. They can have Nick Foles under center. That defense is still going to,
that's a good defense.
It's going to do the job. So that's why going into next week between, and I'm getting ahead of myself, between the Vikings and the Eagles, I don't know who to pick. That's going to be a really good game. They just stopped an elite offense. I don't care what you say about the Falcons. Their coaching sucks, but guess what? They had probably the most stacked offense in the NFL. So they held them to 10 points. That's remarkable. That's unbelievable. I know the Falcons have their problems. I know, but the Eagles are, you know, a team to be messed with. So
you know what's even more ridiculous? That was the second worst loss for the state of Georgia this week.
Yeah,
that wasn't even the worst one. Shout out Alabama football, Crimson Tide, Tua, my hero. But yeah, it's systemic at this point. That's just a team that they're gonna choke. You know what going in?
Yeah, it's bad. It proves it's kind of the theme of this postseason. You don't need an elite quarterback with the Eagles. And I was thinking, like,
but you better have a good coach.
Yeah, you better. Yeah. And they do. I think the Eagles are a pretty well coached team.
I do too.
So, again, next week it's going to be Doug Marrone versus Bill Belichick, and it's going to be, another good coaching matchup on the other side.
Let's be honest, though. We talked about this with Hurley. It's Belichick and Coughlin.
It is. That's really the only reason I'm worried about that, just to sidetrack. Only reason I'm worried about that is because you have Tom Coughlin on the other side, and he obviously knows how to upset
the
Patriots.
Not the only reason, but it is definitely, probably the main reason. Yeah.
I don't think Blake Bortles is putting up 45.
No. So. One more game, of course, we didn't talk about, and it may have been, some want to call it the greatest playoff ending of all time. I am biased. I am still impartial to two of the previous three Super Bowls.
It's top three. Yeah.
It's up there. the miracle in Minnesota, as they're calling it. By the way, Paul Allen, outstanding play-by-play voice for the Vikings. Love his work.
Uh-huh.
And he had a great call yesterday. It's up on ESPN if you haven't seen it. My question is for Marcus Williams. What exactly – so go back and watch the play. You can pause the show here. All right, you're back? Good. Okay. What was his end game – in the way he attacked that ball, based on the way he moved and the timing, his best case scenario was pass interference and the Vikings get a chance at a field goal to win the game. Best case scenario. Worst case scenario, Stephon Diggs was going to jump over him, exactly what happened. And then on top of that, how did the Saints have nobody, and I think it was supposed to be Marcus Williams. I don't even think he was supposed to be there, because in that situation, you take your best tackling defensive back and you stick him back on the goal line, so if that exact situation happens, you at the very least force him out of bounds, and again, field goal.
Yeah, I think with the logic with that play, he completely whiffed, but I think he just wanted to keep him in bounds. I think he wanted to keep the clock rolling.
But then why did he duck under?
Because he wanted to get under him. He wanted to get under his legs and have him fall on
his
back.
But he was a solid 5-6 feet in bounds. You can just let him land and wrap him up.
I think he was closer to the sidelines than that. I think he was right up on the sidelines. Maybe I'm misremembering.
There was enough space for Marcus Williams to let – he wasn't going to land out of bounds is my point. He had to land with his feet in bounds. You could essentially let him catch the ball and then just catch him and just hold him till the clock runs out.
And that would have been ideal. But what he did was dumb. It was just a bad football play. You're the last line of defense. You got to make sure that guy doesn't get by you. He did because it was just a poor tackle or a poor tackle attempt. But I think his logic was we need to keep this guy in bounds. We keep him in bounds and we win the game potentially. So he went for it, and it's one of the biggest defensive blunders I've ever seen in the playoffs. So I don't want to pile on, but it was a horrible play. I somewhat understand the logic, but if you're in that situation, just get the guy down.
I do not understand. I kind of understand. I understand, yes, you want to keep the guy in bounds. You want to end the game. I don't understand doing what he did with his body, how that leads to accomplishing making a tackle in bounds. I understand letting him catch it. But that's not what Marcus Williams did. If you let him catch it, don't even touch him. Just stand there and get in position for the tackle when he lands. If you know you're going to let him catch it, don't make a move before he's caught the ball. Marcus Williams moved before the ball was at its apex.
Yeah.
Like, he timed it. So if he does the move he made a half a second later, it makes all the sense in the world because Diggs has already caught the ball, and then you can legally hit him and you tackle him and the game's over. It's not necessarily the way he moved. His timing was also so off.
Yeah, he was way too early on it. It was horrible. I mean, it's a terrible defensive blunder. I'm happy for Minnesota Vikings fans. Yeah. It's fun to see. It's great to see that team there. I'm also upset that Drew Brees isn't in the NFC Championship and we're stuck with Casey and him. But it is what it is. It was a horrible mistake. Still unbelievable ending. What was it? The last four possessions they all scored on.
Yeah,
or something.
And it was. I mean, you knew with a minute and a half left, there was too much time. Who knew 30 seconds left? There was too much. I will say this. You talk about the fans of Minnesota. Did you see they kept showing that 100-year-old woman throughout the game?
No, I don't think I caught.
So she's the oldest Vikings fan. She's been a fan since the beginning. The team gave her tickets as her first playoff game. It's her 100th birthday, right? Yeah. Frail old lady. And they were showing her constantly to the point it got annoying.
Yeah.
And then they didn't show her after that play. There's no way her little old heart handled that.
No, she died.
There's no way. Yeah, there's a reason they didn't show her. But anyway, excellent weekend of football. Hopefully we're in for some more of that. On the other side, I don't know, while we were gone, the lineup for Boston Calling came out. Very top heavy. The bottom, we'll discuss that after this. You're listening to Calling It, powered by CLNS.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Welcome back to Calling It. Alex Barth and Alex Leibowitz. We are powered by CLNS. That is the Killers. They will be playing Boston Calling at the end of May. Great lineup. Eminem, not sure why he's doing festivals, but he is.
I'm done with Eminem, but that's another.
I still want to see him at some point.
That song, Walking Water, wasn't a fan.
But the thing about a festival is he'll do his old stuff.
He better. I hate when you go see old bands. Like, you see, like... Right. I don't know, someone from the 80s, and then they're like, this is from our new album. It's like, no one cares.
See, festivals, I feel like they do more old stuff. And, I mean, there's, like, Tyler Creator's going to be there, too.
That'll be good.
Paramore. But, you know, I am hoping to go, but in seeing all of that, there's going to be some lesser bands that are there, too. And I feel old. I looked at the lineups. I didn't recognize 90% of those groups.
Yeah.
And I looked at it 2 weeks ago, and I instantly stopped because it's time to play our favorite game, Alternative Rock Band or Fireworks. So if you listen to the show, we did this for the 4th of July. If you don't know, fireworks have really bizarre names. My favorite one from last time we did it was Evil Edna's Horde Toilet. So our intern Tim is in studio. Hello, Tim.
Hello.
He's off from school for Martin Luther King Day, so we were able to snatch him, get him on his day off. He came up with a list of weird firework names and some of the bands from Boston Calling. He's going to read a name. Leibowitz, we'll let you go first. And whoever, you got to guess, firework or band.
Okay, you got it.
And we'll see. I really did not need to. Shouldn't have taken that long to explain.
Just a little disclaimer. I'm not well-versed on fireworks or new bands.
Neither am I. That's why this is just to prove how out of touch we are. All right. Tim, take it away. What is the first title?
All right, the first name we're gonna excuse me. First name we're gonna roll with, it's gonna be Mount Kimby.
Mount Kimby. I'm gonna say that's a band. Yes,
that is correct.
So that's the noise for a right answer.
That's the noise for right. The wrong answer, okay. Tim. Why don't you?
Okay, that's what happens that's if you get it wrong.
Okay, so it's 1-0.
So 1-0, Leibowitz. All right, my turn.
All right, Alex. Oh, you're both Alex. Let's go with No Name.
No Name. That's got to be a band. All right. So two for Boston Calling so far. You can mix them up a little bit.
I know. Oh, I know. All right, next one is going to be Breaking Point.
That's got to be a firework. Oh, you faked me out there.
The bell.
Just for the listeners at home, he went to put his thumb on the buzzer, and I was like, no. And then he went to the bell.
To be fair, there definitely has been an alternative rock band at some point called Breaking Point.
Oh, yeah.
There must be.
There has to be. There's probably a copyright.
That's why we limited this to a Boston call. All right.
All right. Next one, it's going to be Electric Rain.
Oh. Ooh. Electric Rain. That sounds too much like a firework.
I mean, that's a great name for either a band or a firework.
That really is.
If there's not a band named Electric Rain, I'm starting one.
They've got like a kind of a techno, but like world techno sound.
It's kind of funk too, though. Like,
yeah.
It's
everybody in the band has dreadlocks except for the one guy that's bald and has a beard down to his waist.
The bass is the biggest part of the band. It's
yeah.
Like,
bow, 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 bow. That's the guy with the beard.
Yes.
That being said, I'm going to go firework. All right.
2-2. Wow.
It's too easy, Tim.
We're on fire, pun intended.
I guess we do know some bands.
All right.
Next one, let's go with The Swarm.
The Swarm. Ooh.
This is another one. That even if it's a firework, there's definitely a band called The Swarm.
I'm saying it's a band. This is a band.
All right.
Not a Boston Calling. It's not a band.
No. Somewhere it's a band. It's got to be.
So, Tim, you're significantly younger. You're, what, 5 years younger than us?
I'm 18.
18, so you're 5 years younger than us.
4 years. I don't
four
turn
years
23 for,
you. For
another month.
How many of these bands have you heard of?
None.
Okay, so none. We're not as out of
this
touch
is,
as
you
we
know,
thought
you
we
know
were.
What station would play these bands? VIC
Radio. VIC Radio in Ithaca, New York.
Yeah,
yep.
They'd play like Modern Baseball. And like these. There's one band, just side note, one band, I used to DJ for them. The name of the band was literally the letter on your hat, S.
I used to DJ for them. They had a whole half an hour show that was just humming. And apparently that's a genre. No backing instrumentals, just humming. VICradio.org. Check it out.
It's acapella humming. That's great. All right, what's the next one? Alex, it's your turn.
All right.
Barth.
Let's see. Thundercat.
Thundercat. Thundercat's got to be a band.
I know. It's a guy. Yeah.
It is? You
yeah,
know that one?
He's a bassist. He's actually legit.
All right, Thundercat.
Why can I get that one? All right, next. So 3-2.
3-2. All right. This is to extend right here.
All right. Let's see. Let's go with.
Give us a good one.
Nuclear Sunrise.
You see, I feel like this is one that's like it's a band name, but it sounds
it's
like
a band.
A
but are they playing Boston Calling? It's kind of. This is really just kind of. Is this band playing Boston Calling?
I don't think a firework would put the name nuclear in their title.
Oh no, they so would.
I'm going band. My gut tells me band. Okay, of course. I shouldn't listen to my gut.
All right, here we go.
It's
so,
as big as
what for the win here? We'll go win by two. It's 3-2 right now.
It's 4-2. Oh no, yeah, 3-2.
So for the win right here.
Oh, I'm trying to remember which ones I haven't done. All right, let's go with Haunted Scarecrow.
Haunted.
It's easy.
You've heard? Have you heard of this?
I haven't heard of this, but I know what it is.
There, okay.
If it's not what I think it is, then.
I don't think Haunted Scarecrow would be a firework because a scarecrow is something that's very flammable. I'm going to go band. Oh!
It's
no!
A firework.
All right, to tie it up.
Halloween firework to tie it up here.
Oh, geez. Let's go. All right. Next one's going to be Stormzy.
Stormzy.
That sounds like an act that's playing SNL.
Stormzy. I went with my gut last time.
It's Halsey's cousin.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I'm trying to like map it out. Like, how many have we had that or this? I mean, Stormzy. I'm going to say it's a band. Tie game.
All right, so is it 3-3?
3-3.
All right, so we'll make it a best.
But you're the home team, so you go. I went first.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, I was going to offer this being a hands-up round, but.
How about this is for the win?
This is for the win. All right. For me only?
For you, and then
you'll have a chance to steal.
I'll have a chance to steal. That's That's still unfair. Stupid. No. You for the win, and if not, then we'll do a hands up round.
Okay. This is for the win.
All right, we're gonna go with talk.
Talk. Money on the line. Money on the line. I'm gonna go banned. Give it to me, yeah.
4-3.
Talk's way
score.
Too calm to be a firework. I think you won last time, though.
I think I did.
So we're 1-1.
I think that might have been Take Jeopardy, though. No.
No,
you
I won Take Jeopardy. Yeah, we got to Take Jeopardy again.
That was rigged.
I'm pretty sure you won. I'll have to go back and check 4th of July last year. So we need a rubber match. What's next? I guess 4th of July.
Yeah.
Tune in to our 4th of July episode for the rubber match of firework first band.
Once pitchers and catchers report, maybe we can do like a minor league baseball team.
Maybe.
Or firework.
Ooh, that'd be or maybe what we should have done is after the Kyrie trade when the Celtics actually gave us some fireworks.
Ah.
I would have been, you see what I did there. All right.
I like that.
Speaking of the Celtics, obviously we didn't talk much Celtics and Bruins because they were really off all week. They both had their bye weeks and the Celtics had their game in London. How many times do you see a team down by 20 and then win by 20?
With the Celtics, a lot.
Really? We'll talk about them more next week, obviously. Super Bowl discussion, hopefully not Patriot postmortems, but maybe we'll be recapping the Patriots season. And a lot more good stuff, as always. You can check us out on Twitter, at Colin and Podcast. You can share the show along, share the link on the CLNS Media website, clnsmedia.com, or on their Twitter, at clnsmedia. We will talk to you next week. Until then, he's Alex Lebowitz. I'm Alex Barth. This has been Calling It. Enjoy the AFC Championship game, everybody.